Welcome to the U-Turn Podcast. This is the place to connect to who you truly are. We're bringing PhDs, experts, and leaders to help you elevate your mindset in your work life and in your love life so that you can see things differently and truly love your world. I'm Ashley Stahl. I'm a career expert, author, and TEDx speechwriter and booker, and I'm excited to bring you in to this week's episode. Hey, U-Turn friends. I have somebody really special on the show today, and it's Stephanie Mae Wilson. She's a best-selling author, podcaster. I've been on her show. It's so good. A speaker, a go-to guide for women of this generation to navigate what is really murky waters of what she calls the everything era. Through her books, her courses, and her chart-topping podcast, Girls Night with Stephanie Mae Wilson, Steph has mentored more than a million women as they make really healthy decisions and life transitions with career, marriage, motherhood, and more. And if she's not writing or speaking or recording her podcast, you can find her cracking up with her husband, Carl. She has twin toddlers. They're eating pizza. And she's a really good tribe of girlfriends. And she's planning her family's really big move to Spain. So today, I want to talk to her about her new book she has coming out, which is all about creating a life that you absolutely love. Thanks, Steph, for coming on the show.
I'm so happy to be here. It's just, I feel like I'm getting comfy. I'm ready for a good conversation. I'm always so thrilled to see you. So thank you for having me.
You really stand out. And I think it's like there's something really wholesome about you and your heart and what you're doing. Have you always been like a tender heart, like growing up and like pulled towards helping people figure things out? Like, tell me where the root of this is.
Yeah, totally. I've always been a really big feeler. And for the longest time, I thought that that was a bad thing, mostly because it hurt me a lot.
Yeah,
I think, you know, part of being a big feeler, it took me a while to figure out the concept of boundaries.
Yeah,
and to kind of, I was just talking to someone who used the word backbone, and I can't stop thinking about that. But I think in the last, you know, handful of years, I've really grown one, and that's been so helpful to kind of like, it's been like a really good support system for my big feelings and desire to help people. And I've always been that way. And I think I really discovered shortly after college, I got to do this internship at a church, actually. And I was in charge of kind of being a mentor for a handful of girls. And by handful, I mean like 30. There were a lot of them. I got to just be kind of a lightly older sister to walk through life with them. And I noticed that two things served me really well in that time in my life. One is that I never forget what a season feels like. Even though, you know, I would have gone through something so long ago, I really remember how it feels, and I'm still that way. And then the other thing is, I think that like my position in life is to sort of be a guinea pig. I'm walking down this path. I have maybe a machete in my hand, and I'm the one kind of carving the path. But I have people. I love getting to walk with people who are just right a couple steps behind me. I love getting to sort of be like, well, I tried this. This is how it went. This is what happened. This was good. Do this. Don't do this. Getting to be kind of that friend.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I actually have that kind of personality, and I learned like kind of the hard way, which I feel like you've integrated this, is like when you're a helpful person, sometimes you just attract people that need help. And that's beautiful because if you're in a business, that's what you want to do. But in your personal life, it takes a lot of growth. So as you've been creating the life that you love, where have you had to shift with being such a helpful person? Where have you had to put up boundaries? Like, what are some breakthroughs you've had to like preserve the life that you love? Because you have a lot going on. You have a TEDx talk coming up. You have a book coming out. You have kids, you have a husband, you have friends, you're moving, right? So how do you make decisions for what to do in business or what friends to choose? Like, what goes on in your head when you're selecting?
It's, you know, my first instinct is always to say yes. Like, I literally just did this 20 minutes ago. You know, a new friend is having a book signing, you know, 45 minutes south of my house. And I'm like, I could probably make it this afternoon. And I told my husband that, and he goes, didn't you just tell me that you have, like, we're moving, you have a TEDx talk next week, your book is coming out, like all these things. He's like, that doesn't sound like the best thing you can add to your plate. So it's a work in progress. I'm not great at it, but knowing that my first instinct is always to say yes to something, I've gotten in the habit, or I'm trying to continuously get in the habit of pausing before I commit to something and saying like, hey, let me talk to my team. Hey, let me talk to my husband. Hey, let me check my calendar. Let me, you know, I would love to do that. I can say a big, wholehearted, absolutely, I would love to do that. Let me see if I can.
Right.
And having that moment to step back and really evaluate is helpful because, again, like, of course I want to do that. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, so I'm from Colorado, grew up, born and raised in Denver, and my family and my best friends still live there. Mm-hmm. I live in Nashville now. And so anytime I go to Denver, I have a really limited amount of time to see all the people I want to see. And that's always really hard for me.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, someone who's part of my online community or someone who's a newer friend or something says, hey, you're going to be in town. Like, we should get together. I just feel this crunch of there's not enough time, there's not enough space, there's not enough energy. And like, what am I going to do about that? But I use the Denver example specifically because I realized a handful of years ago, if I say yes to this coffee date with someone I've just met, that means that I have less time with my dad.
Yeah.
That means I have less time with my very best, oldest friend. That means I have less time with my niece.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets a little bit clearer, where you're like, okay, like basically nothing is worth time with my dad. And there is we have finite resources. And so if it comes down to that, I have 5 days in Colorado. Am I going to spend these 2 hours with someone I don't know or with my niece? It's like game over. I'm doing it with my niece.
It's interesting you're saying this. I actually just had to practice this in a text message. There's a guy in a networking group that I really think is great. And I was totally, and that's the thing. Some relationships, you're like, I'm totally open to just meet up and connect, but I don't have capacity to continue this on an ongoing basis and weave this into the fabric of my life, right? So this person reached out and was like, let's do coffee again. And I was like, and I actually just texted him back and said, I'm so sorry. I haven't even been able to see my mom. And I did like a bunch of funny little emojis. And it was just like, I would absolutely love to connect. I'm going to circle back when I'm coming up for air. And to be honest, Steph, I don't know if that's going to be for another 6 months. Like, you know, yeah. And that's okay. And I think that sometimes we, as enthusiasts, we just get generous with our time and our space. And it's really hard as soft, deep feeling people. Like my boyfriend, he works in venture capital and he's really helping me harden a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have to. I'm not going to make it out alive. Like,
yeah.
And so this hardening, I think, is so important, and not being so free with your time, not forgetting the importance of when a yes means a no to something else. You cover a lot of really good things in your work and your book. One of them is around just expectations of who you're supposed to be. What are a few of like the biggest breakthroughs you've had that have freed you up to be who you really want to be and not who you think you're supposed to be?
I think a couple things. As I was writing my new book, Create a Life You Love, it was not just a writing process. It was I feel like I went on this whole journey back through my own story as I wrote it. And I was able to kind of relive things and go, what was happening here? Like, why did I feel this pressure? Why did I, you know, why was this decision as hard as it was? And really what I found were so many supposed tos.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I didn't notice them in the moment, but they were always there. And so I got really curious about what's actually happening here? Like, why does it feel like such a loaded decision whether or not or when you get married? Like, why does anyone care?
Yeah.
Or why, you know, when it comes to work or motherhood and definitely how they interact, why is this so loaded? Like, where does that come from? And I felt like I went to go pick up like an ice cube. Like, I was like, interesting, there might be something there in the past from, you know, here. And as I picked up this ice cube, it was like an iceberg. And it turns out that women, and, you know, of course, like, it's like on some level, we know this. I just didn't know the extent of it. People have had opinions about the way women should live their lives for all of time. People have debated, you know, what women are capable of, what sphere of society women should occupy, where women belong, and then also where they don't belong, what they shouldn't be allowed to do, and what they can't possibly be capable of. And they've debated that for centuries. women have had these really prescribed roles of where people, like mostly men, think we should be. And even though a lot of that has changed in the last, you know, 50 years, 30 years, it's still pretty recent history. And so when we make a decision about our lives, if it's, you know, I talk about it like walking through the ocean, you feel the tide and the undertow pulling at your legs, even if you can't see that it's there. And so a lot of it's that. So seeing, you know, the kind of historical pressure that women are under, what this has looked like throughout the last, you know, several hundred years, I'm like, well, no wonder. It feels like such a big deal to say, you know, I want to be part of the workforce instead of being a stay-at-home mom. It's like, well, that wasn't even an option for women not that long ago. Right. So of course it feels like I'm kind of swimming upstream. So that was one big thing. And then, you know, the real turning point for me, I've had a hard time with every major life decision I've made because I am a firstborn type A rule follower, people pleaser, second guesser. I have anxiety. Like every single thing that could make this tricky is like true of me. I want to get it right. I want to make my people happy. I want to invite everybody else's opinion and make a decision based on, you know, the consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had a really hard time with all kinds of decisions about what I want to do with my life and who I want to do them with.
Mm.
So I remember I was in a particular spiral about whether my boyfriend at the time was my person. We were talking about marriage and I was like, if I'm going to dive into this, then I need to dive into this. If I need to run, I need to run soon. And I don't know how to make a decision so big as to like whether or not this person is a person I want to spend my life with. And, you know, I'm going around the like whole carousel of what ifs again and again and again. And finally, I had a friend sitting with me who stopped me and she put her hands on my shoulders and she almost shook me. And she was like, Steph, you get to decide. And I've needed those words over and over and over again throughout my life, through every big decision, having kids, what, you know, to do for work, every work project I do, you know, I'm looking for the right and the wrong way to do things. And what I've learned the hard way over and over again is that there's not one right way to build a life or a business or a family or a schedule or whatever. Like in so many ways, we get to decide. We get to make this look like we want it to look. And so instead of looking for all these outside voices, it's taken a lot of practice, but I've started to turn inward and go, hey, like, what do you need? What do you want? Yeah. What do you want this to look like?
Yeah.
And make decisions accordingly.
I love that so much. And I think that we forget and we get so used to outsourcing our opinions and what we want. And it's like this underlying belief that other people know better for us than we do. And it's so ingrained in us. It's interesting, like I didn't even consider like choosing if I wanted to have kids up until maybe 3 years ago. Like somebody asked me in the right way, like, well, do you really want to have kids? Do you want to do that? And I actually paused and thought, well, I've never really thought about it. I just thought I was going to do it. And I do choose to have them if I do, you know, and I'm still kind of like pending in that goal. But I think that it was interesting to actually make the choice. People don't even realize things that like your geography, it's kind of decided for you where you live based on your parents. But we never really wake up and say, do we really want to be here? Obviously, there's benefits of being closer by your parents. But it's like, is this what we really deeply, truly want? And it's so interesting that we forget to ask ourselves about these questions. When you are making a decision and you are finally kind of moving forward with confidence and clarity, do you have any exercises, approaches? Like what do you do to go inward so that people listening right now can start to take that with them as they are making their own decisions?
Yeah, you know, it's I as I was writing the book, I was wishing that there was like, you know, a three-step process, and there's just not really. And so instead I shared more of a toolkit. I'll share two of the things that have been really helpful for me. One is a note in my iPhone. And I just like, I'm not even going to qualify. This is not a dumb example. This is a very real example. I have a hard time getting dressed in the morning and I have a hard time shopping for myself and I don't like it. And I don't like it because there are a bazillion different options and variables. It's like shirt, like you could have a bazillion different shirts and a bazillion different pants and then combine them as a bazillion different ways. And we're not even talking about like shoes or accessories or coats. Like it's just too much. And so when I really am so overwhelmed by the decisions as I'm gathering pieces of clothing, let alone just putting them on my body in the morning. Mm. Well, finally, I realized a couple things. I realized I feel really good if I'm like dressing up. I feel good in dresses because it is one piece of clothing. Mm. And I'm comfortable in all kinds of different dresses, but dresses. Also, if I'm not going to wear a dress, I usually want to wear like jeans, a white shirt, and a neutral something, mm-hmm. like just really classic. And I had never been able to wrap words around something about me, something about my preferences, something about my habits, enough to be able to identify it and use it moving forward. And mm-hmm. so I remember like I wrote that down specifically, like I'm going to stop trying to make this other outfit work. I'm going to just stick with what I actually like and what feels good. And I'm going to make this decision one time instead of trying to make it over and over and over again. And so like this note in my phone, anytime something comes up where it's like, I hate this at work. I hate this task. I never want to do this task. Mm. Okay, well, pay attention when your body, your soul, your mind, your heart tells you that, and make decisions according to it. And so I have this note in my phone where I just take notes on things about myself that I realize as I realize them. And that's been so helpful to just give it words when I have them. Mm. And then the other thing is, you know, I have had this really wonderful grandmother. She's my mom's mom, and she passed a couple years ago. We had just the most wonderful relationship. And I remember sitting with her just at the very end of her life and asking her, what was important? And she was having a hard time talking at that point. And she basically said, like, the little things, like, take a walk and laugh and be with people you love. Like, that's what's important. And I just watching her reflect on her life at the end of her life was so profound to me. And so that's something that I think about is like, at the end of the day, at the end of my days, what am I going to wish I did here? Or what am I going to want to have done? And look, like trying to imagine looking back that way, put some things into perspective. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there are some questions it doesn't answer. You know, you're like, well, I don't really know what's going to be going on then. But there are some things that are crystal clear. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm not going to care about is like what I looked like in a bathing suit this summer. Like, you know, it's like silly things that were like, this feels big. This is taking a bunch of my energy. Like how many followers on Instagram I had. Like, yeah. I am not going to care about that at the end of the day. And being able to kind of flip your perspective like that is like, man, at the end of my life, I'm going to be so bummed about how much time I spent hoping that I was making the algorithm happy.
Yeah, I feel like that with my body image. I'm like, how many hours am I going to spend thinking about losing 5 pounds? It's absolutely absurd. And my pant size and da da da. Yes. And we still do it, right? It's like an impulse. Okay, so I think one of the things that is really hard for people, for some of the reasons we talked about, is coming up with a vision, like for their life. Some of it's really hard because we've been used to asking people what they think for us versus tuning into our own voice. Some of it's hard because we just don't even know what we don't even know is out there. So let's say somebody's listening right now and they really don't know what they want for their life. They don't have a vision and they want to start creating one. What are some ways that you start to connect and be able to start registering like what kind of vision you would want or what would be best for you? Like, how do you get inspiration for your vision?
I love that question. Really, I think it starts with inspiration. It's really, really, so this is a perfect example. It happened the other day. I have 3-year-old twins and they are in preschool and they had a unit last week where they had different like helpers come and talk about their work. And they had a firefighter, they had a police officer, they had a nurse and a doctor. Well, so at the end of the week, they asked the kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? A question I hadn't asked them before. And they have their little answers written down on this piece of paper. And they are all a firefighter, a police officer, a nurse, or a doctor, because those were the options they were given. There's nothing else. None of them, no one chose something that wasn't on that list. And I think that that's so often how we live our lives. Like we see our moms or our dads live a certain way. We have siblings that live a certain way. We live in a town. Like you said, our geography is chosen for us based on where we live and grow up. And so for a lot of us, we haven't seen life lived a different way. And I think that's a really important place to start, is intentionally looking for people who are doing things differently and making note of it. For me, a place where I get a lot of inspiration is from my friends, hearing from other people. That's why I love being a podcaster, is because I love hearing people's stories. But hearing, you know, recently I heard someone talking about, I've heard several women talking about selling their businesses at some point and the process of building it so you can sell it. And, you know, the thought processes behind that and what needs to happen. And honestly, if I hadn't heard them talk about building a business so that you can sell it, like that just wouldn't be on my radar.
Yeah.
Am I going to sell my business? Not today, but maybe at some point. In a similar way, you know, I've, so many of the decisions I've made, like I had a friend mention that they, you know, were looking at potentially buying a bigger house. It was a perfect time in the market to kind of upgrade if you were going to. And they didn't even end up buying a bigger house, but we did, because it was sort of the power of suggestion. Another place that I like to look for inspiration is in things that are seemingly totally disconnected. I really love watching and really reading about people living in unconventional homes. When people are like, I turned this greenhouse into a home, or I took an old fire station and made it a home, or I live in a treehouse, or, you know, just all these different things, all these different ways to live. I love exposing myself to that. Because I think through seeing people do one part of their life in an unconventional way, it reminds me that that's possible in all these other areas of our lives, that there really are no rules. And if you can, like, if it works for you, it works. So connect some things that may seem disconnected and see how it goes.
I love this so much. Is there anything I haven't asked you for people who are, you know, like trying to step into their everything era with a sense of, And by the way, I don't even think I asked you to define it. So maybe just tell everybody what it means. And yeah, is there anything you want to impart to them before we go?
Yeah. So the everything era comes from, you know, as I was writing this book and mining through my own story and looking back at a decade of work that I've been doing, sort of being a mentor and a big sister figure to, you know, hundreds of thousands, a million women. We've been talking about decisions and transitions for years. But I didn't really understand the extent to which this is a thing until I heard a statistic that I'll never forget. And it was in this rare study of lifespan development. And these researchers at Boston University and the University of Michigan found that 80% of our life's most defining moments happen before we turn 35. And like, there's some wiggle room there. But initially when I heard that, I thought, there's no way that's true. And then I started kind of thinking about it. And I thought, you know what? There's a lot of truth to that. I started looking at the average ages, you know, of some of the most life-shaping decisions we make. And so many of them are concentrated between 25-ish and 35-ish. And so it really, what's happening is that we're making some of our life's biggest decisions, deciding some of our major plot points of our lives, kind of all at the same time. It's like this massive double booking of this season of our lives. And what I couldn't find, the more I dug into this and realized, oh my gosh, this really is a thing that we are all going through, is that I couldn't find a name for it. And so finally, the everything era came into my world. And it was like, you know what? That's exactly it. It's the everything era. And there's something so exciting about that, but also something so overwhelming about that. And that's why I love the word everything. But I define it as this weird, wonderful, and wildly difficult span of years during which you'll make the most biographically significant decisions of your life, all at the same time and in front of a very opinionated audience. And usually I'm thinking about like my Aunt Sharon, like, yes, Aunt Sharon, I know I'm not getting any younger.
This was such a good interview. I'm so appreciative of you. I'm so excited for your book. It comes out, everybody, Create a Life You Love with Stephanie Mae Wilson, comes out April 30th. And this episode will be out. And I am just so excited for everybody to read it and start to reflect on their everything era.
I love that. Thank you for having me, Ash.
Yeah. Is there somewhere you recommend everybody look? I know it's going to be everywhere books are sold, but anywhere in particular?
I mean, Amazon's a great place. It's fast. or your local bookstore. Really, it'll be everywhere.
Beautiful. Thank you, Steph.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into the U-Turn podcast. And thank you again so much for our sponsors. We are here because of you. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out our sponsors. We always pick people and brands that we trust and we believe in. And just for listening to the show, writing your reviews on the Apple app, and just being willing to make your own U-turns. We'll see you next week.